Okay, sounds good.
It's probably going in the sheriff's department, then he's going in the police department.
Is that
where the fleet used to be?
Well, we're having a lot of people come over, like, yes. Like, well, it's at 1,055th Street. I need police reports. I need a paid ticket.
That's why the
sign is going
to be really special needs.
Yeah, the surplus, but you keep that up.
Yeah, so that's why I put the sign up, because we are having people like step by a couple times a day. We can know where the police, but we're not.
So for future agendas, if we could. So
this is where they used to have the shop that they worked on.
Citizen
Crimes. Yeah.
Maybe you moved over here, what?
March 20th.
Supervisors.
Yeah. The oil change.
They moved it over right across
from the supervisors coming.
I think it would be
Chairman slash supervisors.
I'm not sure what that was before.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I have 6:15 on my clock. We'd like to start this month. Meeting of the Human Services Committee. Roll call. Looks like we have everyone here except for Supervisor Gable, who is excused. He's a different meeting. And Supervisor Hallman at this point would be unexcused. If he shows up, so much the better, but he was apprised of the meeting placed by myself personally at our last county board meeting.
Also the two.
Yes, recognize there are two even governance are here as well. Next item on our agenda is citizens' comments. Are there any
Mr.
citizens
Chairman?
With comments? Yes.
My name is Bob Pitts. I'm chairman of the Board of Trustees at Brookside. And I'm here in support of two candidates that are going to be considered as trustees tonight, Judy Jensen and Barb Wernesky. I have known these two ladies for many, many years, and they're very well qualified to serve on my committee. I want everybody to understand that I'm delighted and anxious to see them seated on my committee, and I hope you have given them your support, because they're very well qualified. And I want to thank Jim Kuser for this consideration for appointing these two young ladies to my committee. Some way or another, I'd like to have someone relay that message to him. It's very important that we have qualified people on this committee. And another note, I'd like to say some of you supervisors are not able to attend our open house. And I'm hoping that if you have a few minutes, I would like to have you call me sometime, and I'd be happy to set up a tour, private tour, to Brookside. You're overseeing committee of Brookside. I think it's important that this committee will have an opportunity to see how wonderful facility that we have. So if you have a minute, a few minutes, give me a ring at 652-3701, and I'll be happy to bring you through. Okay? Thank you so very much for your concerns.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Pitts. I appreciate that. I have a comment or two, and that is I'd like to thank personally the two new appointees for being here. That was my request, that someone who's coming in and doing a new job for the Brookside Board would meet with this person. So again, thank you for coming. Just a note in our agenda, we have a little bit of a compressed agenda. I'd like to be adjourning close to 7 o'clock, just because there's some IT issues that can be addressed this evening for supervisors who have to see about the email that's happening in the administration building. So we'll go through our presentation here. We'll have a medical examiner give us some information via the presentation she has for us. And I believe we're considering doing a walkthrough, a brief little tour of the facilities,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Those are my comments, I think, for the moment. We'll proceed on with the approval of minutes of May 1st, 2018. Has anyone had a chance to review those? Everyone seen those? Youth and Governance, did you have a chance to review them? And we can do this in a manner of different protocols. We can all vote at one time, but I think rather than necessarily having you feel like, oh, I just want to go along with maybe what the majority is saying, we're going to often ask for your vote in advance. You realize your votes are non-binding, but still they're important in the sense that you review the documentation. So, approval of the minutes for May 1st, 2018. Do I hear a motion from the committee here?
Motion to approve.
Motion by Supervisor Hallman.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Berg. Youth and Governance, you can vote yea or nay to approve the minutes of May 1st, 2018.
Nay.
Yay. So approved. And the committee, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, carries unanimously. Thank you. Next item on our agenda is a resolution to approve the reappointment of John O'Day to the Kenosha County Board of Health. Looking for a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded the resolution to approve John O'Day, Kenosha County Board of Health. I would just remind the supervisors here that along with the second one coming up to Dr. Diane Gerlach, that these people have been in their position before, so we know their background, we know their history, we know their credentialing. So, that being said, Youth and Governance, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Carries unanimously. Again, same thing for Dr. Gerlach here. Looking for motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Discussion? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye. Aye.
All those say aye. Those opposed? None. Passes unanimously. We're on now to the appointment of Judy Jensen to be appointed to the Berkside Board of Trustees. Looking for a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Discussion?
I just have a comment to make.
Go ahead, Supervisor.
I have known Judy for not as many years as Bob. And being a member of the Board of Trustees at Brookside, I look forward to be working with her. So I want everyone to approve her nomination.
Any other supervisors' comments? I would just say prior to the vote, again, thank you for being here tonight and for making yourself available.
Appreciate it. I appreciate it. I mean, I look at it this way. If we want to have a better county, we have to be willing to help.
Right. That's where volunteerism comes in. So if there's no further discussion, Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? None recorded. It's unanimous. On to our next order of business, resolution to approve the appointment of Barb Wisniewski to the Brookside Board of Trustees. Looking for a motion.
Move to approve.
Second.
By Nudo. Second by Kevin. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Discussion.
Well, I guess I can make the same comment. So okay. Instead of going through the same thing, I'll just say same thing.
It was a fun drive in.
But again, thank you for taking the time to meet with us. It has been my request, as I mentioned earlier, before we began, that new candidates should come before us. Have a top opportunity to meet the committee face to face, read the resume. I think it's an important thing to me. So thank you for being here. We do appreciate it. As far as the voting goes, Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? None seen. Unanimous. It is approved then. We have next the tour of the medical examiner's office. Do you have a presentation you want to do beforehand?
I do have a presentation. So I could do it either
it's
way.
It's your preference, whatever you'd like.
Well, I can go through this. If everybody's okay, I can go through my presentation, and then we can go for the tour, if that's okay with everybody.
Yes.
Okay. So thank you, everybody, for being here. I appreciate it. And welcome to our new home for the medical examiner's office. We're very excited to be here. We just moved in on March 20th of this past year. So before this, we were over at our offices were at the job center, and then we were renting space from well, that's now Frederick South, Kenosha campus. So there was a lot of traveling back and forth, and now everything is here and localized all in one space. We're here with the police and the sheriff's office, so that makes things a lot easier when we have to go over cases and things like that. So things have been really streamlined over the past couple of months. So we're very excited about it. We're very excited about our new place here. So thank you to everybody for all of your support. It's truly appreciated. If you have any questions, just let me know as I go through. I'm giving a very quick, very quick overall presentation about our office and what we do. So the medical examiner's office, I am a layperson medical examiner. If you were to put me in, which means I'm not a doctor. If you were to put me in a larger county, such as like Cook County or Milwaukee County, my title would be chief investigator. And I'll go over a little bit over that here too. So a little bit, you might hear the term of coroner. Sometimes you hear medical examiner, you hear coroner, you hear those, like, you know, they're interchanged, and that is not the case. So a coroner, if you might not know, some of the counties here in Wisconsin are coroner counties. Some are medical examiner's counties. With a coroner, there can be anybody who runs for office of a coroner, and they're elected. There's no standards, there's no training, there's no education requirements, no experience requirements. You have enough votes and you're the coroner. Things have obviously changed over the years with forensic science and with the training that goes behind it and into death investigation too. So with our county is a medical examiner county, and I was hired. I had to go through the whole hiring process. My background had to be checked and make sure that I was who I was, you know, who I said I was, and I had all my credentials checked and things like that. So each county has their own standards. Like in Milwaukee County, they have board certified forensic pathologists. Same thing in Waukesha County. But all the other surrounding counties, just like Racine County and Jefferson County, who all also work with Milwaukee County for having Milwaukee to do our autopsies. And they all have medical examiners, too, at Jefferson and Racine and Ozaukee, too. And they're the same thing where they have laypersons. Because there's a very big shortage of forensic board-certified forensic pathologists in the United States. It's hard to get a forensic pathologist, so... as far as training standards for death investigation, there are no set protocols. We've been trying to push it in the legislation for having set protocols for death investigation. And at least in Wisconsin, that hasn't happened yet, but we are keeping our fingers crossed. So the medical examiner's office, as you may or may not know, we're an independent investigating agency. We work with the police. We work with the sheriff. The police have and the sheriff have jurisdiction of the scene itself. We have jurisdiction of the body, whoever the decedent is who died. So we are doing our own independent death investigation. We work together, but we are our own little entity here. We're not sworn. We're not law enforcement, but we do work with the DA's office, and we're another branch of the criminal justice system. Whenever we have a death investigation, that information goes to the police, all of our autopsy reports and things like that. And our reports, they all go to the police, they go to the DA's office, and then they're the ones who, the police are the ones who recommend charges over to the DA's office to have a person, if another person had contributed to the death of the person who died. So we follow Statute 979, which goes over all the rules and regulations for the state of Wisconsin for death investigations. And we respond pretty much anywhere that there's somebody not under hospice care. So if a person dies in a car accident or a suspected drug overdose, anything that's suspicious that's outside of sometimes we do go to hospitals too, because somebody will die in a hospital of they've been brought in and they die of a drug overdose, so they're brought in because they had a car accident and they died from their injury. So then, of course, we're going to respond to the hospital or to the nursing home. We go out there, we do our own scene investigation, we take our own photos, we pronounce the person dead. We do a body exam, so we're very like detailed, and we document all of the injury trauma. We do next of kin notification, and we also do a positive ID of the person. So if they need to be fingerprinted or you know, a tattoo is on file from the police or what have you, then we do that too. So we're going to anything that's also, you know, homicide, suicide, accident, anything that's suspicious, we're going to be going to that and investigating with the police department. So we have our deputy medical examiners are our death investigators here in Kenosha County. That's their title. Instead of being entitled death investigator, it's a deputy medical examiner. So they're the eyes and ears for the forensic pathologist. And as I went over before, they're going to be responding to the scene. We are on call 24/7, 365, holidays, weekends. John Jansen can attest to me calling him on just this past holiday. I'm like, hey, I just let him know that I'm on way to, I had to go to a scene at the beach with the police. So we're on call, we're going, and it doesn't matter if it's raining, snowing, sleet, hail, hot, we're going to go. As I mentioned too, we do the pronouncement of the person, officially pronouncing them dead. They're not officially dead until we say they're dead. So you might have somebody who has, like they're a skeleton. Well, we know that they've been there for a while, but until we pronounce them dead, they're not dead. So we do that. As I mentioned before, we photograph the scene. We also make the death notification to the decedent's family. So we're going to the next of kin to their house. We're trying to find them as fast as possible. We're trying to beat social media, which is a hard job to do because, you know, things get onto social media so quickly. So we're always racing against the clock to try to find the next of kin quickly enough and then get them notified. We always try to do an in-person death notification, especially if the family lives in the county, because we want to be there in person. We want to talk to them, and we don't want them to, we don't want to call them on the phone and be like, hey, you know, if they're driving, you don't know what they're doing. They might be driving. They might have a medical event when you tell them this news. So we always go with the police officer, and then we're making an in-person death notification. And then if somebody dies in our county, but the next of kin lives in another county, then we contact that police agency, then we ask that that police agency do an in-person death notification. We also do transport of the decedent to Milwaukee. An autopsy, just because we arrive to the scene, is not necessarily going to mean that an autopsy is going to take place. That's on a case-by-case basis. But if the person is involved with a homicide, a suicide, an overdose death, anything suspicious, weird, you know, we're like, don't know why this person died, well, then we're going to be bringing them in for an autopsy. And then also, too, if the person's unidentified, we have to do that, too. And as I mentioned before, we're working with law enforcement, firefighters, nurses, doctors, and we do a whole lot of documentation. Because we have to. So, as I mentioned before, there's a shortage of forensic pathologists in the United States, board certified. So this is a little bit of a background of what the education is to become a forensic pathologist. You got your 4 years of undergrad, your 4 years of medical school, and then you're doing a residency, usually like in pathology, sometimes it can be surgery too, of another 4 to 5 years, a year fellowship at the medical examiner's office working under a forensic board certified forensic pathologist. So that's over another year, and then you gotta pass the boards. So there's a lot of extra schooling that goes into becoming a forensic pathologist. As I mentioned before, every jurisdiction has their own requirements. For here, we prefer that they have, like if somebody were to be hired here at our medical examiner's office in Kenosha, prefer that they have a bachelor's degree in mortuary science, nursing, healthcare, criminal justice, and some experience working with dead people. Because I don't want the first time somebody sees a dead person to be here at the medical examiner's office. And back long, long ago, I started at the funeral, working at a funeral home. I started just answering phones, you know, working visitation. And then I just kind of worked from there and got just, you know, started doing transports of people and got to see embalming, and it just kind of grew from there. So we want people to have previous experience working with dead people, because when you see them in a funeral home, there's been a transformation. They've been embalmed, there's makeup, all sorts of things that the funeral director does, that they do to make the person, you know, presentable for a open casket. So here, it's a bit different because we're dealing with people in various stages of death and decomposition. So it's, unfortunately, it's not always pretty. So like I said, that's why we want people to have previous experience seeing working with dead people. A little bit of background about the cause and manner of death. Some people use it interchangeably. It's two different things. When we do send a person for autopsy in Milwaukee, the doctor will determine the cause of death, and we determine the manner of death. As you see here, you have the cause of death, which that can be anything. That could be the stroke, cancer, dementia, multiple blunt force injuries, gunshot wounds. But the manner is a general classification, and we always do the manner. Either it be myself or my chief investigator that we determine the manner into whatever category. So you can have somebody who's dead of a gunshot wound, well, did they accidentally shoot themselves, or did somebody intentionally shoot them, or did they intentionally shoot themselves, accidentally shoot themselves, or did somebody intentionally shoot them? So it's like, you know, it could be, depending on one of those, it could be a homicide, it could be a suicide, or it could, you know, their cause of death could be, you know, gunshot wound to the leg, and then the manner could be any of the different manners that you have up there. So we have to do a lot of further investigation to figure out, like, what exactly, what category they fall into. As I mentioned before, we have the autopsies take place at Milwaukee, and you have an autopsy assistant to also help them. I used to do that a long time ago when I worked at Macomb back in just north of Detroit, a long time ago. And there's a lot that goes into it. So you have, as you can see here, there's the documentation of everything. You have photography, you have weighing of the organs, you have toxicology that can take, you know, that can take several weeks to several months. It just depends on how long, how far they're backed up, and if they have to have additional tests performed. They're testing for drugs of abuse, they're testing for alcohol. And as you guys have probably seen as of late, we've had a lot of new drugs popping up with the fentanyl and fentanyl analogs, and I'll go into that. So sometimes there's a lot more searching that has to go on by for toxicology. Histology, as you can see up there, that's just looking, what they do at autopsy is they take specimens from each of the organs, and then they're going to put the organs, they're going to get that onto a slide and get that under a microscope, because sometimes you can't always see a disease process with your own two eyes. You have to, like, look at it more closely under a microscope. Microbiology, we do testing on that too, or the medical examiner's office does collect evidence, and of course photography and more documentation. And Milwaukee has 6 board-certified forensic pathologists on staff. The autopsy fee that we pay, it's been $1,500 for the past couple of years. It's been steady for the past, I want to say, two, three years. It's been at $1,500. And that's all-inclusive of the toxicology, the histology, the autopsy, any additional testing to be done, that's included, too.
Is that, excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt.
That's okay.
Is that passed on then to the family, or
no,
that is
worked into our budget. That comes out of our budget. Part of our budget is levy, and part of it is revenue based. But we do have different fees that we do charge to families for, like, if we have to transport, we have a transportation fee. We have a death certificate. If we're going to be signing the death certificate because we need to do an autopsy or an external exam or medical records review, then we charge the family a fee for that. And then we also have a fee if somebody's going to be cremated, the medical, under state statute 979, it's required that the decedent is viewed by the medical examiner's office. So we go out to the funeral home, we do a full body examination, we document any scars, tattoos, you know, eye color, hair color, skin color.
And that's regardless of the circumstance of death?
Yeah, so we document like literally everything, like front and back, take a fingerprint, take a photo, and we might want to make sure at the cremation booth that there's nothing, you know, like, oh, why wasn't that reported? Like, why do they have, you know, sometimes we have a cremation view and they have, you know, or stomach is, you know, there's a brand new incision, like, hey, nobody reported that to us. Yeah. So, and then we have to wait. So we have to do more investigation into that. Then we have, if the doctor is signing the death certificate, like the regular physician, we have to review that, make sure that there's nothing weird on the death certificate, such as like fractures or injuries, things like that. And then we can issue the permit. So there is a fee, coming back around.
Yeah.
There is a fee for issuing the cremation authorization. So, and then, yeah, so we do have some revenue that is available. We also have tissue donation take place here too. So that's we charge to the donor. There's the Wisconsin Donor Network, and then there's the American Tissue Foundation. So we charge them, and they pay us to use our autopsy suite. And then we also have storage fees that we use. We charge for reports. So there's a, you know,
okay.
There's not a lot, but we have some. But yeah, we don't charge the family for the autopsy itself, but couple of other things. So.
Can family request an autopsy even if the police were to say we don't suspect anything? Can a private person just say I'd like you to perform or have performed for me an autopsy?
So if they don't fall under the circumstances of, okay, like we go there and there's no foul play, everything is, you know, okay, everything's on the up and up, and we don't have a reason to bring that person in, then the family, and if the family wants an autopsy, then they can pursue an autopsy, but that has to be done privately. So we have we tell the family to work with the funeral director, and then the funeral director will help coordinate a private autopsy with the...
So he contracts with a pathologist?
The family would be contracting with the pathologist. And it's pretty expensive. I mean, it usually starts around $2,000 or so, depending on the doctor that you contract with, and they want payment up front. And then it goes up from there because of additional testing, whatever that they do. So a family, if they wanted to pursue a private autopsy, they could. Like, I can't stop them. So, but that option is there.
But they would not be contracting with pathologists out of Milwaukee necessarily.
It's, yeah, whoever they can find. So there are, they could,
but it's not routinely done.
I mean, well, it's expensive. That's the first issue with it. And there's other pathologists like at Milwaukee County, at Waukesha County, and Dane County. I'll have forensic pathologists on board. Mm-hmm. So they could find there or, you know, start looking in Illinois.
Thank you.
No problem. And then our... one of our deputy medical examiners will also transport the decedent to Milwaukee because we wanted to ensure that chain of custody is kept, because once the person is in our custody, we don't want to lose that chain of custody, because especially if it's a homicide or a drug overdose, if you lose that chain of custody, then if the DA were charging somebody, then you could lose your whole case. So our caseload, as you know, we have 168,000 people in Kenosha County, and we're a busy little office. We have a pretty big caseload here. Last year, 1,400 deaths, 179 autopsies. The external exams we do those here. It's either by myself or by Jennifer Schrader. And with that, what we do is, an external exam would be somebody, like, let's give you an example. Somebody who, like, okay, you have a person who is living at home, they're living independently, they're walking independently, they can cook for themselves, everything like that. They fall, they break their hip. We see a lot of broken hips. And then from there, they get transferred to the hospital, and then they have surgery, and then that the pretty much that fracture is like the beginning of they start going into a downward spiral, where they don't make a full recovery to their baseline level of functioning. And so can we somehow link that injury, that fracture, to their cause of death? Well, if you have something that obvious where, okay, they had the hip fracture, go to the hospital, have surgery, then go to, sometimes they don't even, they make it out of surgery and then they just go right into hospice, or they might go to a nursing home for rehab, but they never return back to living independently at home. Their death would be an accidental death. We're not going to send them for autopsy, but we are still going to do a full review of all the, we're going to request all the medical records. We're going to do an external exam, which is non-invasive, but we're going to be taking photographs. We're going to be taking DNA specimens. We're going to be taking fingerprints, documenting any injury, trauma, things like that. And then we determine the cause and manner of death. And once in a while, we get medical record reviews. Those are where we work with the Register of Deeds office. So any death certificate that goes to the Register of Deeds office, the Register of Deeds office, I think probably for about the past 2 years or so, we work with them, that they call us for every death certificate and run it through us before they approve it. And we find some cases that way where, the doctor will put on fracture or subdural hematoma or something like, you can't sign it like that. So, and at that point, the person is probably, they're usually already buried, so we're not going to disinter them, but we're going to pull all their medical records and sign their death certificate so that it's on the up and up.
Patty, if I may for a second,
yes.
We got about 15 minutes left for this. So, Patty can continue her presentation, but if you did want to take a walkthrough and see the facility, we can always have Patty come back. I think the latter part of your presentation was going to deal with heroin and fentanyl issues that certainly can be a presentation in and of itself at a human service committee.
Yes.
So I leave that up to
I have three slides. I could do it really quick and I just
no, give us your give us your closing remarks. That's
okay.
Fine.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
My name is Bob Pitts. I'm chairman of the Board of Trustees.
Yes.
If someone is on the Title 19,
yes,
and the family wanted autopsy after passes on, who's responsible for that?
If the person is on Title 19, they what they'll do, the family will do, is they'll work with the funeral home. Now, for a private autopsy, that would be up to the family. Title 19 is not going to pay for a private autopsy. That would come out of the family's pocket. But if the person's on Title 19 and we perform the autopsy, then I think it's Act 55. I had to look up the exact act. But last year, 2 years ago, there was an act put into place where if a person's on Title 19 and there's certain parameters that they meet, then the medical examiner's office fees are waived. And then under Title 19 also, then a certain amount of money is goes towards their funeral expenses. If a family doesn't meet Title 19, then they can also apply for Kenosha County funeral assistance too. And then that goes through our economic support supervisor, who will review the application and then see if they're eligible for possibly county assistance for funeral assistance. And then the ME fees would also be waived at that point too. And then the county pays the funeral home, I think it's $700, I believe, to help towards the funeral expenses. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Really quick, I just have three more slides and then I'll take you on a very quick tour.
Sure.
And I've spoken about this quite a bit about our toxicity deaths. To date, we have 16, and our numbers are, you can see them there. They're doing okay. We still have 16 cases pending. We're only halfway through the year. So I won't know until at least the end of the year or a couple months into next year what our final numbers are going to be. But last year we were at an all-time high of 57, with 22 of those deaths being fentanyl or fentanyl analog. Fentanyl is 80 to 100 times more powerful than morphine. The fentanyl analogs are, it's still fentanyl, but they changed the chemistry just a little bit, and then it's called a different, like it's like fernal fentanyl, or acryl fentanyl, or acetyl fentanyl. It's still fentanyl, but just a little, like a sibling of the regular fentanyl. It's usually made, the fentanyl analogs are made illegally, they come from overseas, and they are dangerous and deadly. They're also a problem for law enforcement, for us too. We've had to change our policies, procedures, how we do things to keep everybody safe, because a little bit of fentanyl can hurt or kill you quickly. Carfentanil, we have not had any carfentanil deaths here, but there's a little, to show you how much carfentanil can be lethal compared to heroin itself. Carfentanil is a fentanyl analog. Like I said, we have not had them here. They've had a lot in Ohio. I know they had a handful in Chicago. But 2 milligrams, as you can see there next to a penny, can take out a small elephant. Like that will take out a small elephant. So I mean, it's crazy the amount of such a small amount can do so much damage. And as many of you probably already know, we have the Kenosha County Opioid Task Force that I founded back in February of 17. Super proud of that. It's of that task force. It's based off the Lake County Opioid Initiative. I found out about that, and since they started their opioid initiative a couple years back, I think it was in 2011, they've been able to decrease their deaths in Lake County by 30%. So like, well, why reinvent the wheel? And talked to John about it, and we've been going strong. We've been having meetings every month. I think about 40, 45, 50 people from all sorts of different agencies. It's been absolutely phenomenal to have so many different people at the table. And the reason for that is because we have all these different agencies within the county, and as they've said in Lake County, like everybody's their own little silo, all trying to fight the good fight, but nobody's working together. With our first meeting, I'm super proud, not just proud, but I'm super proud, to say that with our first meeting, Sheriff Beth was there, and then the health department was there. And Sheriff Beth wanted to have the Narcan brought in, and then the health department's like, hey, we have a grant for Narcan. So with that right there, we're able to get the Sheriff's Department deputies all fitted with Narcan. My deputy medical examiners all carry Narcan, and Pleasant Prairie and Twin Lakes Police all carry Narcan too. We've been working also with the fire departments, getting these rack cards out to businesses, telling them about what to look for signs of an overdose, how to get free Narcan, things like that. And we've been working with the hospitals to get these packets out too about resources. And we have a lot of good ideas going on. So I encourage you to be there. Our next one is coming up. It's always the second Tuesday of the month. So the next one, I think, is the
next Tuesday
14th?
At Pleasant Prairie.
Yeah, and it's going to be the Pleasant Prairie, the Village Hall. And then we also have a monthly, or we're going to be at the Farmer's Market pretty soon, too. So pretty excited about that. Sorry, okay. And I think I'm done. And there's my contact information. And we're also on Facebook, so like us. For the Army's Office and the Opioid Task Force. So thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think just for protocol purposes, we probably adjourn our meeting here.
Okay.
We can still go for our tour and so forth and do it.
Okay.
But just in closing, I'd like to bring to your attention our next supposed scheduled meeting would be the 3rd of next month, precedes the 4th of July holiday. And I think there could be potential attendance issues with that. So I think we'll make the policy decision at this point to have the 10th of next month be our next meeting of this committee. With that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Youth and Governance?
Aye.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Again, thank you.
Oh,
Patty, why don't you start with the back area?
Okay, and then we're forward? Okay.
Yeah, that's more exciting.
Okay.
We need signatures for the resolutions you passed. Yeah. Human Service Committee members, please.
Okay.
Bring the carbon paper. Time is 18:43.
It's all.
You might go in the same direction.
You know, you feel like you're being asked.
I was thinking that, but then I was like, I'm not in any big rush to get anymore.
I wasn't just as a bro.
No, I never got home.
Yeah, I was kind of really clicky there.
You guys have emailed her, right? It's probably the best way to get agendas. Yeah. If you let, if you run him down and give him the agenda, then she sends out the agenda and all that. So she
can send that for you. Do you have a piece of paper? Yes, I do.
It'd be nice to see that. Make it a point to do it before the end of summer. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Much appreciated.
I'd love to.
Are you going to
I was there last month.
Oh, yeah. Did you see?
I couldn't stay for the whole thing. It was in my district, though. I had to go.
You better come back.
You got it.
We got one down?
Gabe, you said no. Eye on everything, right?
Oh, you wanna just like sorry. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. How you doing, Mr. Spitz?
You didn't get that.
Thanks, you too. You don't want to stand up, John.
Give it a
for all of us to follow.
Supervisor Grady said he would take over support Judy Jensen's and Barbara since he had the county board.
Yes, he did.
The other two we didn't want to, as you know.
Okay.
Show me where to look at
that.
Door.
I don't know if it's over, but that's it. Thank you very much. Because I wanted to send you the agendas, but
I looked online and I found it.
Oh, good.
You've got another 1 year. What's this year?
Yeah, I'll take them all.
Are we coming back in here at the store?
No. I mean, you can if you'd like, but we're not required.
Thank you.
Excused. David, I don't have this signature.
So am I getting any of those back?
Well, technically, John said you could take the ones back that we don't need. Is that on our agenda or not? I'm going to take them all just in case.
Okay. So I'm going to just note that you have them.
Thank you
for taking those.
Well, it spares you and John having to sit around.
Oh, John's not going, huh?
JJ?
Yes.
What?